Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In the news this week, President Obama goes south of the border. A happy ending for the crew of the Maersk, Alabama. Tea Party protests on tax day. In Mexico, President Obama talks drugs, guns, and solidarity.
This is my first trip to Mexico as president, and I see this visit, as I know President Calderon does, as an opportunity to launch a new era of cooperation and partnership between our two countries.
The pirated crew of the Maersk, Alabama returned to U.S. soil. Here's third engineer John Cronin on NBC's Today Show.
I was just so relieved and overwhelmed that it's over. I'm home now. I'm the greatest country in the world.
Demonstrators took to the streets on tax day, calling for lower taxes and less government spending. Here's Tea Party protester Melanie Hall in Lansing, Michigan.
I think we should be looking at tax cuts. You know, when people have more money, then they spend more money. That would help people a lot more than giving money to, you know, big organizations and, you know, nobody knows where it goes.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines, and you can join the conversation. What's your top story this week? Are you following President Obama's trip to Mexico? Did you attend a tea party? Joining me from Washington, D.C. this hour is Janet Hook. She's a staff writer for the Washington Bureau of the Los Angeles Times. Janet, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks.
Also joining us from Washington, D.C., Jibby Martinez, political columnist and contributor to Politico.com. Jibby, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at The Atlantic magazine.
Hello, Jane, Janet, and Jibby.
So let's get right to the headlines this morning. Big news out of the Justice Department, which made public detailed memos describing brutal interrogation techniques used by the CIA. The methods were approved by the Bush administration for extracting information from senior al-Qaeda operatives. They're spelled out in careful detail, passages describing forced nudity, the slamming of detainees into walls, keeping them awake for up to 11 straight days. Janet Hook, let's start with you. What do you make of these memos being released now?
Well, they were released in response to a Freedom of Information Act request, so it's not as if the Obama administration said, just decided on their own time to release this. The thing that's interesting is in releasing them, Obama addressed what probably would be the second question that people would ask. The first question is, wow, how could they do this? We thought we learned everything about torture techniques with the Abu Ghraib scandal during the Bush administration. The second question is, okay, so now what do we do about it? And Obama, the administration has made clear that they don't plan to prosecute the CIA officers who committed these acts,
right,
on the theory that they were acting under guidance from the Bush administration saying that these techniques were legal.
Hmm. So Mr. Obama condemned what he called this dark and painful chapter in our history. Jack Beatty said these interrogation techniques would never be used again. What's your take? Do you agree with Janet? Now what do we do? That's the big question.
I think it is, and I'm afraid the Obama administration is showing no inclination to press further on this. There is a Justice Department investigation of the lawyers in question, and that could result in their disbarment for giving such patently bad advice. But the president seems to have no inclination to go further and to appoint an independent prosecutor, for example, to look into the entire structure of this disgrace. And, war crimes were committed. They were committed in the prior administration. There's some evidence that this goes very high in that administration, the authority for it. And if we just simply walk away from it, I mean, that's not what we do with other crimes. On the other hand, the president's a politician, and he doesn't want all the problems that would create. It would create a huge firestorm among Republicans. But, you know, someone pointed out Richard Nixon was pardoned by Gerald Ford, and Gerald Ford had two employees, Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld, who rightly concluded you can pretty much get away with anything in this country. And they tried to. And, you know, could someone, if these crimes go unpunished, the crimes of the Bush administration, the war crimes, will future administrations, future people in those administrations be able to say, well, the Bush people got off, so we can throw the Constitution out the window, too.
Jane, this is Jubi. If I might add,
please,
even though the president or his administration is a little bit reluctant to do this, I know that there will be a push from Congress. This is something that especially the Democrats in Congress who were there when the Bush administration was in power were very much against. And what these memos showed is that the practice was much more widespread than even they had admitted or anticipated. So I don't think this is the end of it. And I also don't think that this is going to be the end of release of this kind of information. We're going to keep finding out more and more about what happened during the Bush years. And I think it will get to a point where the administration can't simply look to the future and kind of try to forgive the past. I think at some point they may have to take, you know, some kind of action, whether it's through the Justice Department in, you know, prosecuting the higher-ups or, you know, the Spanish government going after, you know, the higher-ups in the Bush administration for some other war-related incidents.
So to be continued. Let's follow President Obama to Mexico, where this week he met with Mexico President Felipe Calderón in Mexico City. He ratcheted up efforts to curb the flow of drugs and guns across the southern border and imposed financial sanctions against three of the most violent Mexican drug cartels, threatened to prosecute Americans who do business with them as well. Jubi, a significant meeting at a crucial time?
Very significant meeting because President Obama had three challenges here that I could see. One is that he had to try to repair the damage and the relationship that began to exist between Mexico and the Bush administration. Even though President Bush was very friendly in his own personal feelings and relationship towards the government, things really eroded quickly because his attention turned elsewhere, you know, such as Iraq. And so President Obama had to go in there and basically reestablish some credibility and say, yes, we are going to do what we say we want to do. Secondly, he faced criticism from President Calderón for not being able to push right now the reinstatement of the assault weapons ban, which is something that the Mexican government wants because they're finding that 90% of the weapons seized in Mexico in these drug arrests and drug raids are guns that came from the United States.
Well, Jubi, let's listen to the president speaking about that. Mexican officials are in favor of reimposing a ban on assault weapons. President Obama is unwilling, apparently, to commit.
None of us are under any illusion that reinstating that ban would be easy. And so what we focused on is how we can improve our enforcement of existing laws. Because even under current law, trafficking illegal firearms, sending them across a border, is illegal.
Janet Hook, on the campaign trail, President Obama said he would reimpose the ban. Seems to be pulling back a bit on that.
Yes, it's a side of Obama that has come out in a lot of different issues where he is striking this really pragmatic tone after having made broad and unqualified promises on the campaign trail. He is recognizing a political reality that is true, that it would be very hard and a bloody fight and politically damaging to some Democrats to ask Congress to act now on it. And he's sort of hoarding his political capital for things that he gives higher priority to. I do think, though, that to the extent that he keeps pulling back from issues that matter a lot to liberals in the party base like that, and he's indicated that his proposal to have higher taxes on the rich may not come for a while because of the recession, he risks sort of eroding the enthusiasm of the more liberal members of his party.
Panel, I'd like to get a caller into this conversation at this point who has a point about our headline story, the interrogation memos released by the administration, the Justice Department. Here's Dana calling from Brewster, Massachusetts. Dana, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Yes, Obama is making a very serious mistake by not pressing forward with this.
You mean pressing charges?
And not pressing charges of torture and, you know, against the administration and or the CIA, who's ever responsible for initiating it. setting a precedent for future administrations to engage in the same practices. And, you know, you talk about making a big circus out of it. Oh, not you, but Obama, I guess, doesn't want to, quote, make a big circus out of it, as someone there said. But what about the big circus the Republicans made about Clinton lying about an illicit affair? I mean,
so you're saying it sets a bad precedent. I hear you, Dana. Thank you. Jack Beatty, would you respond to that before our break here?
Well, that's my own feeling, that it does set a very serious precedent, and it puts the stamp of continuity on it. Now we have a new administration, a new party, and, you know, you could argue that Obama is participating in a cover-up precisely for political reasons, out of that pragmatic caution, political caution that Janet was talking about. He doesn't want to spend political capital going through all this. And yet the result is that the narrative of the war on terror could well be torture works. There was torture. Terrorist activity went down. Maybe the two things are causally related. I mean, all sorts of things are possible here until we have a hearing. And Pat Leahy in the Senate says he would like to have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission on it, but he can't go forward without Republican support. That is not forthcoming.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the week's top news stories. I'm joined by Janet Hook, staff writer for the Washington Bureau of the LA Times, also Jibby Martinez, political columnist and contributor to Politico, and Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at The Atlantic magazine. On Tuesday, President Obama delivered a speech on the future of the economy to students at Georgetown University. He said there was cause for hope.
There's no doubt that times are still tough. By no means are we out of the woods just yet. But from where we stand, for the very first time, we're beginning to see glimmers of hope. And beyond that, way off in the distance, we can see a vision of an America's future that is far different than our troubled economic past.
Glimmers of hope, Janet Hook. The numbers show a mixed bag, though. Home construction took a bigger-than-expected drop in March, down 10%. Housing permits, an indicator of future building activity, also sank. Retail sales dropped sharply in March. Wholesale prices fell. And yet fewer Americans unexpectedly filed claims for jobless benefits last week. What do you see in these numbers?
Well, it is a really mixed picture, and I think part of what Obama was trying to do in that speech is to say, we'll have good indicators, we'll have bad indicators, let's keep our eye on the ball. And his job actually is a very tricky balancing act to offer, you know, the glimmer of hope, even while keeping people's expectations realistic. And he's kind of at a turning point, or he's starting a new chapter in his management of the economy, which is that he spent the first few months here putting in place big programs to help address the problem. They're now in place. The economic stimulus bill was passed, and the money's flowing to states and localities to try to jumpstart the economy. There's the bank bailout. And now the question is, will it work? And in the meantime, so while watching these up and down indicators, Obama's going to be the main person who's setting the tone on how to read those indicators.
Mm. President Obama and Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke were hardly effusive this week. They said, quote, there will be more job loss, more foreclosures, more pain before this recession ends. Jack Beatty, we're not out of the woods by any stretch, as President Obama said.
We're not. And then, you know, looking ahead, he talked about a future where the economy would be founded on rock and not on sand, quoting the Sermon on the Mount. And the crucial to that rock-founded economy, he said, is controlling medical costs, health insurance costs. And this week, Nancy DeParle, his point person at the White House on the health reform effort, gave a press conference, and the question of cost control was talked about a lot there. This comes just as the Journal of Internal Medicine recently released a report on the Obama plan and its promise and perhaps its illusions about cost control, and they're pretty, I think, unsparing on this plan. They conclude that the Category 1 improvements that the Obama administration wants to make, you know, emphasis on prevention, the wider adoption of healthcare information technology,
yeah,
better management of diseases, those sorts of things, that they provide little or no cost control. Mm. For example, comparative effectiveness research, which treatment works better than the other, that could save something like, according to this study, less than 0.1% over 10 years. And the business of prevention, that usually adds to medical spending. The two elements of the plan they thought could keep costs down, creating an insurance marketing exchange, which would essentially intervene more in the insurance market and create pools so that people could have larger choices, but especially the public plan that the administration proposes, that could save money, and they could save it in three ways, because the cost of administration of a public plan of health insurance is so much lower than a private, because the public plan would put pressure on prices in the private sector, and other reasons. But the trouble is, that's the most controversial part of the Obama plan, and there have been signals from the administration that they're going soft on the public plan because it is so controversial, and on the other hand, they're going in the direction of individual mandates, even though in the campaign he spoke against those.
So
that's just what the insurance company wants, insurance industry wants. They want individual mandates, everybody covered, but no public plan to compete
with. So Jibby Martinez, jump in here. President Obama clearly linking health care to broader economic problems. What do you see on the horizon for this fight?
Well, I think that, first of all, he has to still win over the American public to some extent on the economic plan before he can really sink into the health care plan. If you notice, part of what his purpose was this week, which, you know, that speech occurred right before tax day, was to explain why they had to do the bailouts. You know, when you hear people complain, they're talking about how everyone's getting a bailout but them, the little taxpayer. You know, they're not getting rebate checks this time. And so when you start getting into a complex issue like health care, I personally think that the interests on all side of that are so competitive, and they're going to, I can think back to the Hillary Clinton healthcare plan. I was on Capitol Hill during that time and thought that was just a fight that could never be waged. And Obama has promised to do it so quickly. I wonder if he can really do it that quickly, because there's so many contentious issues and so many different interests fighting against each other. It's just really hard to see that come through so quickly by the end of this year.
Janet Hook, let me bring you back in here and talk a little bit about changing focus to the tax day that was this week, which brought tea parties across this country. You wrote about that this week, protesters demanding lower taxes, less government spending. What was your take on what happened across the country this week?
Well, it's really interesting because focusing on tax day is something that Republicans have done every year for quite some time. They try to use that as an opportunity to highlight the differences that they see between Republican tax interest in cutting taxes and Democrats' interest in raising taxes. But this tax day was different, and for many reasons. First of all, usually the focus is coming from Republicans on Congress. And this year, it was, as you say, it was out on the streets around the country with all of these rallies. Now, obviously, the Republican Party had its part in that, or at least glommed onto what started out as sort of a casual comment on cable news of someone saying, complaining about the spending and tax policies of the Obama administration. Mm. But anyway, the other thing that this underscores is how different the whole climate for the debate about tax policy is. I mean, Obama, unlike President Bush, who was clear he had his tax cutting policy, Obama wants to raise taxes for some and cut taxes for others. And I think Republicans are trying to play on the sense that that he says he's only going to raise taxes on the rich, but that others will be affected by it.
Well, the governor of Texas actually weighed in this week, as you well know, Janet, after addressing a crowd at an Austin anti-tax tea party. On Wednesday, Governor Rick Perry flirted with the idea of Texas secession as a reaction to an overreaching federal government.
Texas is a unique place. When we came in the Union in 1845, one of the issues was that we would be able to leave if we decided to do that. You know, my hope is that America, and Washington in particular, pays attention.
Texas secession? Really, Janet Tuck?
Well, we'll have to hear from Jibby about this because she's from Texas.
What do you think, Jibby?
But well, let me just say one thing.
Sure.
You know, obviously this is a little bit of hyperbole.
Yeah.
But it does remind us, though, that there has been Republican governors around the country have stepped out as voices of opposition to Obama's policies, including going to the lengths of saying that they weren't going to accept the stimulus money that was headed to their state. A lot of them haven't followed through on that promise.
Yeah, and as far as Texas is concerned, we should remind the audience that Governor Perry is facing a very tough primary fight in his next reelection campaign. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison is going to be challenging him, and this is the first serious challenge he's had within his party. So I think we're going to be hearing a lot of hyperbole out of Texas for a while.
Get used to it. Here's another call from Acton, Massachusetts. Judy is on the line. Judy, welcome. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thank you. Go ahead.
As I'm listening to the conversation about health care and taxes and all that, it makes me think that the politicians are behind people. I think people recognize that we have to change what we're doing with health care, and we have to change the tax system and Social Security system. And it's just that people are, I think, ready to accept change, but the politicians are afraid to go there. And because we don't have people protesting and saying, raise my taxes, get rid of the insurance companies. You know, the people who are the loudest and out there with the Tea Parties are the people who are afraid of the changes. But we have people like, you know, Buffett saying, raise my taxes. You know, people who are well off who are saying, we have to change. Mm. And for some reason, that voice isn't loud enough. Mm. And, you know, it's hard to organize people to go out and say, even though they'll accept it, they may not protest for it.
It's an interesting point, Judy. I appreciate your call. Janet Hook, would you respond to the caller?
It is a very good point. It is the case that the way things work in our political system, especially on Capitol Hill, is that the squeakiest wheel gets the grease. And I think that's why the success of Obama's budget is going to rest heavily on him, because we already see that even Democrats in Congress are a little leery, if not outright opposed to some elements of his budget plan that really would change the tax code. You know, they're not wild about reducing deductions, tax deductions for wealthy taxpayers, as Obama proposed as a way of paying for his health care plan. He's proposed scaling back farm subsidies, and there are lots of Democrats from farm states that don't want to go along with that. And you're right, it is hard to get people to go out and demonstrate in favor of the tough choices that Congress has made.
You know,
the Obama people have tried to do some version of that by trying to mobilize some of his campaign supporters to lobby Congress to pass his budget, but it's very general. I mean, they don't say, oh, you know, Congress, please raise my taxes.
One of the things that I hear all the time is people don't understand why it's hard for Obama to get his agenda through, since we have a Congress that now has more Democrats in the House and Senate. And the bottom line is that it's all about timing. He knows that some of these votes that he's going to be asking some of the conservative Democrats to make are going to be tough for them, whether you're talking about health care or assault weapons or immigration. And that's why you see them talking about a timetable. You know, they want to do the economy first and make sure that that's underway. Then they want to try to get to health care. And, you know, on immigration, the Obama administration is relying on Congress to initiate that discussion. He promised in his campaign that he would have a plan by the end of this year, with thinking that there would be some kind of vote in Congress next year. Well, you know, what we're seeing is that some of the more liberal members of Congress, the Hispanic, Black, and Asian Pacific Islander caucuses, are pushing immigration early. They're pushing it out to try to force Obama to talk about it some more. So, you know, it's about the makeup of Congress. Even though we have more Democrats, there are also more conservative Democrats. And just because we have more Democrats doesn't mean you have more votes for particular issues. It can be more based on regional preferences than on party lines.
While we're talking about the economy, I need to mention the so-called stress tests for American banks. The Obama administration is drawing up plans to disclose the condition of the 19 biggest banks in this country as it tries to restore confidence in the financial system without unnerving investors, if you will. Jack Beatty, the administration decided to reveal some very sensitive details about the so-called stress tests that are now being completed. How important is this?
Well, you know, it's a slippery slope. If they let out some details about some banks, they can create doubt about the other banks. And so I think they may be in a position where they're going to have full disclosure or something like it in order to sustain confidence. The trouble is, full disclosure is going to have a lot of bad news for these banks, and that'll hurt confidence. You know, if I might just return to Judy and these teabag demonstrations. Judy, take heart. I mean, if all these people could get were dribbles, you know, people in their tens and maybe hundreds coming out with an entire network, Fox News promoting it, with corporate lobbyists putting out money for it, if that's all they could get all over the country, and if a lot of the people who showed up were, what should one say, politically certifiable, some of them at least, and there was a fringe of sort of, nativism and white racism and so on, if that's the best they can do in the face of the fact that President Obama has 71% confidence from the public right now in his economic policies. The Republicans in Congress have 38. If that's the reality, I don't think that he has to worry about getting people out on the streets to get some momentum for his program.
Let's get another call in here before our next break. Allison is on the line from Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Allison. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. I just have a couple of comments about the economic condition we're in. People have short memories, particularly the Republicans, in that they delivered in 8 years what they're expecting Barack Obama to clean up in 100 days. And we just have to give the guy a chance. He's pragmatic, he's intelligent, and he has a different way of looking at things. And I've been a supporter of his since 2005. I think the Republicans have it all wrong, and what they're doing is whipping up rabid fear. They're fear-mongering all over the country, and I hope that Barack has a chance because the world is looking at him.
Allison, thanks. Janet Hook, I'll let you respond before our break here.
Yes, I think that Obama himself, though, has contributed a little bit to the high expectations of acting quickly, and that's part of what he's doing, what he was trying to do in the speech earlier this week of sort of setting the expectations, measuring, taking the measure of the problem. And I think you're also right that Republicans see this as a political opportunity to exploit a widespread sentiment, especially among Republicans, that Obama's policies, you know, while the focus on this week was on taxes, what people are really concerned about or more concerned about is the level of spending. The money that's going out the door is of magnitudes that we haven't heard of before, trillions of dollars. And it's harder for him to explain where that money's going to until people get their jobs.
I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. In other news this week, reporters crowded around the first family as they took a stroll across the White House lawn with their new, much-anticipated dog, Bo. President Obama was asked where Bo would sleep.
We've got a bunch of spots, but he'll be sleeping inside the White House. Not in my bed. We set that rule down a long time ago.
Cute little Portuguese water dog. Those Navy snipers who took out the pirates and rescued the American captain got everybody talking in this country this week, including Jay Leno.
They shot the three pirates without hitting the captain or any of the parrots that was sitting on the pirate's shoulder. You see that? The birds were saved.
And no one thought 47-year-old Susan Boyle would be able to sing when she took the stage on the TV show Britain's Got Talent. Well, everyone was wrong. Turned out she wowed them all. And a YouTube sensation at about 11 million hits, as I saw it yesterday. We're talking about the week in the news. My guest this hour, Janet Hook from the LA Times, Jibby Martinez of Politico, and Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst. Before we look at international affairs panel, I want to go back to Washington for just one more piece of news, because an important apology came out of Washington this week. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano apologized on CNN on Thursday morning for a recent Department of Homeland Security report warning of returning military veterans joining extremist right-wing groups.
This is an assessment, not an accusation, as the Veterans of Foreign Wars Organization released yesterday. But I know that some veterans groups were offended by the fact that veterans were mentioned in this assessment. So I apologize for that offense. It was certainly not intended. I'll be meeting with the leaders of some of those groups next week.
Jibby Martinez, what do you make of the DHS report and this apology from the Homeland Security Secretary?
Well, you know, it was one of those reports in which the tone was almost vitriolic and undermined the facts, which were that there is an increase in hate crimes and hate speech. And the report was attempting to monitor, you know, what are the factors playing into this? And they cited several things, citizens' anger about the economy, about illegal immigration, about abortion, about President Obama's election. And one of the things that the report was saying is that, sort of parenthetically, that as veterans come back from overseas and have trouble getting back into this economy, that they can be sensitive to some of the appeals by the extremist groups. And so Napolitano was very correct in apologizing to the veterans groups because they took it as a blanket assessment that they're all, you know, likely to become, you know, members of extremist groups. Of course, that's not true. And unfortunately, and I think Napolitano recognized this, that the report, which, by the way, began under the Bush administration, it was a study that was started last year, the report's language was not perfect and precise, but some of the conclusions that it was drawing are based on things that have been happening in the in recent years, and especially in recent months, like an increase in hate crimes against Hispanics.
Jack, an important apology to your mind?
I think a tactical bow to that lobby. The Southern Poverty Law Center, we had a representative on this week talking about this, that they point out that the number of hate groups in the U.S. Really have grown by 54% since 2000, and a big increase last year, fueled by immigration fears, the economy, and Obama's election. That's out there, and hate is out there, and that's why some of the rhetoric used at these teabag parties was alarming in that context, and the kind of thing one hears on talk television from these. Glenn Beck et al. I mean, it almost seems like in incitement to riot. So we're in a dangerous time, and potentially, and I think this report, rightly, along with what I read in the Wall Street Journal today, the FBI is itself investigating white supremacist groups, and precisely on the issue of the connection to returning veterans, their efforts to appeal to returning veterans. So we're going to hear more about this.
Let's go overseas now. Americans celebrated the rescue of the American captain held by Somali pirates. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton spoke out about the problem of piracy on the high seas. She began by praising the crew of the Maersk, Alabama.
These men are examples of the best that America has to offer, and I salute and thank them. But now it falls to us to ensure that others are not put into a similar situation. As I said last week, we may be dealing with a 17th century crime, but we need to bring 21st century solutions to bear.
21st Century Solutions to bear. Jibby Martinez, there are still 17 captured ships, about 260 hostages waiting to be ransomed off the Somali coast.
And, you know, I hear people talking about trying to increase U.S. naval presence there, but it's just not practical. There are not, the Defense Department has said, that that's just not a practical solution. And so they do have to figure out how to work with other nations and how to also work with the private shippers, because the private carriers do pay ransom. And yet, you know, the governments, especially the United States government, does not. And Hillary Clinton reemphasized that this week. So, you know, this is a real vexing problem for the administration, too. I mean, who would have thought at the beginning of the year that not only would they be dealing with an economic collapse, but also piracy? You know, piracy was not something, I don't think, was anyone's radar, even though it's been out there for a while. This is the first time it really comes to the attention of the American public,
That's right. Let's turn to North Korea for a moment, because this week North Korea declared that it would permanently pull out of the nuclear disarmament talks and restart its nuclear program. It also expelled United Nations inspectors from its country. North Korea has taken a hard line before, only to soften its stance once it got concessions or make a political point. But let's hear first from UN Secretary Susan Rice. She's actually a U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. She spoke about North Korea and the reaction to the country's rocket launch.
The Council spoke with one voice and sent a very, very strong message to North Korea that it can't violate international law with impunity. We got additional sanctions added to the existing regime. We will add companies and entities that will be subject to an asset freeze, and indeed goods and materials that are important to North Korea's nuclear program will be prohibited from transfer there.
Janet Hook, what do you make of North Korea doing this time?
Well, I think it's very interesting. It's like North Korea and the rest of the world is still sort of testing Obama's mettle on the world stage. I mean, it was a big question when he was running for president whether he had the background and the stamina to deal with threats like this. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's not accidental that North Korea is doing this so early in his administration. Frankly, that challenge and the challenge of dealing with, you know, the Latin American countries down in Trinidad at the conference today and dealing with Iran. Frankly, the rescue of the captain from the lifeboat seems like an easy job by comparison. Hmm.
Let's go to a call now about this matter. Skip is in Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Skip. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks.
You bet. Go ahead.
I just had a quick comment to make. I think Barack has done more in 100 days to improve the image of the United States and the entire world, and Bush took 8 years to drag us down into the gutter.
And what do you think about North Korea? What should it be doing there?
Well, I think Barack is taking a hard stance on that, has brought in other countries to come up with the sanctions. He knows how to use that hard stance when he needs to, but in acknowledging him also, he really knows how to open up a hand when he should to Iran. Iran is now talking about, well, maybe we can enter into discussions with the West. So, I mean, I just really acknowledge him for being able to do both ends of the spectrum, take that hard stance and to open a hand and reach out.
Skip, thanks. Let's turn to Iran for a moment. The Obama administration considering a shift in strategy, as Skip mentioned, toward Iran by dropping longstanding American insistence that Tehran rapidly shut down its nuclear facilities during the early phase of negotiations over its atomic program, a sharp break from the approach taken by the Bush administration. Jibby, do you think it'll work?
I think, you know, what President Obama was saying during the campaign is that you have to at least try to talk. You have to try diplomacy. And what he's doing in Iran kind of reminds me of what he's doing in Cuba, where he removed some travel restrictions, you know, between family members. And opponents said, well, you know, they're still committing human rights violations. And Castro responded by saying, all right, look, we want to get rid of the embargo. So let's talk about improving human rights in Cuba. And so in the last couple of days, you're now seeing Cuba extending a hand to the United States to say, let's see how we can further along this process. Of course, Iran is much more difficult. But Cuba is a very difficult political problem here in the United States because it's so close to us. I just think that what they're trying to do is figure out a way to talk. And I think that the outreach that he has made already to Iran in a couple of speeches recently shows that they you know, are not going to draw a line in the sand right away. And sometimes that works. Mm.
Jack Beatty, pick up on Jibby's point. Do you see a thawing in U.S.-Cuba relations?
Well, I was heartened this morning to hear Raul Castro's statement from Cuba, Raul Castro saying, yes, we want to talk about these things. And I think that's an illustration of what our caller just said, that Obama takes an initiative which is generous in kind, or even he even talks about countries in terms of respect, as he did with Iran in an early speech, how much he respected the Persian civilization, what a great country it was, and so on. These things matter, and perhaps an opening could begin with Cuba, especially with the, you know, where there's mortality, there's hope, at least in the case of Fidel Castro. And that can't go on forever. And who knows what his brother will want to do. But I think it's a response to what Obama did. And I think it's very heartening. And then just, again, following up on the caller, sending Barack Obama to Latin America, where, you know, Yankee imperialism is just, and the feeling about Yankees is just what it is from history. Sending a man of color, multicultural background, cosmopolitan outlook there, that nothing could do us more good in that part of the world, really, than simply his, of course, who he is and his qualities, but just simply his symbolism. I mean, it does us immense worlds of good in Latin America.
We must turn to Pakistan before the hour is up. Taliban insurgents, as reported in the New York Times this week, are teaming up with local militant groups to make inroads in Punjab, which is a province that is home to more than half of Pakistanis. This, according to the New York Times, is reinvigorating an alliance that Pakistani and American authorities say poses a serious risk to the stability of the country. Also quoted in this story, American intelligence and counterterrorism officials say they view the developments as alarming. Janet Hook, what do you make of this?
Well, it is a big challenge to the Obama administration in the United States to figure out how to handle this. They have put a lot more focus on Afghanistan, which and the Taliban influence there. It's not an easy problem to solve, and it kind of takes the focus away from parts of the world where they have a firmer grip on what they want to do next.
Jack Beatty, I know this is a big topic of concern for you as well.
Well, you know, I just fear where we're headed here. I mean, you read more and more that pressure from our predator strikes and our efforts in Afghanistan drive the Taliban in deeper into Pakistan. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. Pakistan, its stability is more important than anything in that part of the world to us. You could imagine, therefore, an optimum scenario for Afghanistan. No Taliban. Secure government. That would be a devastating scenario for Pakistan because it would have simply pushed the Taliban across the border and destabilized that state. And if our goal is the optimum solution in Afghanistan, are we on a collision course with the realities in Pakistan? Mm. I just don't think this policy has been thought through, and I don't think the president is being honest about the options America really has there, which are very few.
Jibby Martinez, let me get you in here on our last point to Mexico once again, where the Obama administration has named a former U.S. Justice Department official to crack down on drug-related violence along the U.S.-Mexico border, so-called border czar. Will this make a difference? Who is this person, by the way, and will he make a difference?
Well, you know, he's a former Justice Department official who actually had a lot to do with prosecuting illegal immigrants and drug trafficking in his past. I mean, I think Frankly, one of the things that comes across, if you just think about another drug czar, is that our border czar, another czar, is another layer of bureaucracy. Really, what people need, I think, what the United States government needs to do is just get its handle on immigration and try to fix that. It still stands as a symbol of inefficient government, and I think that the sooner that they can resolve the immigration issue, the better they'll be able to handle all of the other peripheral issues, which deal with not only, you know, illegal immigration, but also legal immigration and wage laws and, you know, drug trafficking, human trafficking. And, I mean, there's so many things that can be controlled if they know who is coming in and out of this, out of the United States.
Janet Hook, do you agree?
Yes, I really do. This is an issue that has been a big one, a controversial one for some time under Bush. And I think that by appointing a czar, it is sort of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it shows a priority, you know, that this is something that he really cares a lot about. On the other hand, there is this sense of sort of dispersion of power, or that somehow that might make it harder to do something more deliberate.
Many thanks to my panel this week. Appreciate your time. Janet Hook, joining us from Washington, D.C., staff writer for the Washington Bureau of the Los Angeles Times. I appreciate your perspective, Janet. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also, Jibby Martinez in Washington, D.C. She's political columnist and contributor to Politico. Jibby, thank you.
Thank you.
And On Point news analyst and senior editor at The Atlantic magazine, Jack Beatty. Jack, as always, thank you.
It's always a pleasure to work with you, Jane. Thanks.
Thank you, Jack. You can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us also on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.